Good morning, and welcome to my podcast. My name is Judy Fitzgerald, and I am a 10-year breast cancer survivor. I thank God every day that I'm here, and I take nothing for granted, as I'm sure you all have come to that realization as well. For the past 10 years since my diagnosis, I have been very involved in the breast cancer community, and I know very well how difficult those first few days are when you're newly diagnosed. And in this time of COVID, I can't imagine what it must be like when probably the thing you want the most is a hug from a friend or a visit from your family. And that's been taken away from you in this time, you know, critical time. So I want to be here as a voice that hopefully will be able to give you some comfort. I am not a medical professional, but I am my actual profession was a teacher, and my students were a great source of love and support for me. Lucky for me, I was teaching in a Catholic school, and my faith is very important to me. Between my faith and the support of my family, my students, and my friends, it made my journey bearable. So I'm reaching out to you and just saying that I know how you feel. I know how scared you are. I know how your whole world has been turned upside down. But I hope by listening to some of my reflections that it will help you to take a deep breath and figure out which the best way forward. Welcome back to my podcast series, which is actually the reading of my book, which is called A Teacher's Journey, What Breast Cancer Taught Me. My oncologist recommended to me when I was going through treatment to keep a journal. And she said I would find it not only helpful in the future, if I wanted to go back and look to see why I made certain decisions or what information I had at the time I made those decisions, but also it would be sort of a cleansing activity where by putting it in writing, I could put my feelings in there. It wasn't until I met Dr. Tui of the Cleveland Clinic a year after my treatment had ended and discovered that he had a preventive vaccine that was 95% effective in preventing breast cancer, that I decided to turn my journal into a book and use it as a fundraiser for the vaccine. So all the proceeds from my book go directly to Dr. Tui's research lab to help cover the cost of his continuing research. I now also serve as a consumer advocate on the clinical trial panel for the vaccine. This is 10 years later. It took 10 years to get the funding, but we did recently just get the funding from the Department of Defense to go ahead and produce the vaccine and then go to phase one clinical trial for safety testing. So it took 10 years, but we're very close. So if you'd like to purchase my book, you can go to my website, www.sistersforprevention.com. If you want to just relax, the purpose of this podcast is to give you a chance to sort of take a deep breath, sit down and relax. One of my favorite times of the day is when my grandchildren sleep over. And before bedtime, we always read stories. We get comfy pillows and blankets, and it just sort of makes us take a deep breath at the end of the day. So that's my goal to help you, is just take a minute, and hopefully by hearing my story, it'll help you to process your story. And when I was first diagnosed, I read every book I could find that was written by a survivor, and it helped me so much. So I'm hoping that this will help you in some small way. So my chapters are quite short. So we're going to start with chapter one. Each of my chapters begins with a theme, and I also include a quote that inspired me in writing that chapter. Some of the quotes are from the Bible, because the Bible quotes that I received from my students that were praying for me during my treatment, I kept some of those and used them as chapter titles. So, chapter one is called Strength, and the quote is, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." And that's from Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. So chapter 1 begins. Before you bought this book, you may have wanted to ask me the same question I asked myself. Why? Why write a book, that is? When I searched for the answer to this question, I found the answer on my survivor bracelet. The word strength. Strength in numbers, that is. When I think back on those difficult 12 months of treatment, I think of all the cards, flowers, phone calls, prayers, and visits from family and friends when I needed it most. Without their support, I know I couldn't have made it. Prayer is also an important part of my life and was a major part of my decision to write this book. Women are social animals. We share. More importantly, we are multitaskers, organizers, and caregivers. I was very fortunate when I was diagnosed. I had recently left my teaching job to join my husband in his retirement, and my two sons were grown. Many women facing my journey have to juggle jobs and children while battling this terrible disease. I wanted to do something to help others who did not have the time to do all the research I had been fortunate to have the time to do. Now back to strength. When I was diagnosed, I felt I had lost control of my life. It was terrifying, and being an obsessive compulsive person, I wanted it back. I'm not a doctor, I am a teacher. When faced with any problem, I approach it like I encourage my students to do. Do your research and find everything you can about the subject. Well, you might say that my book journals the cliff notes I have created as a result of my breast cancer journey. Quite simply put, it's what I've learned. Since January of 2009, I have read every book on breast cancer I could find, ranging from survivor stories that inspired me to keep going when the going got tough, to books on lifestyle, supplements, and nutrition. I wanted to learn everything I could possibly do to keep my body healthy and cancer-free. It was in the connection of these elements that I felt there is a need, a survivor book that also included how to incorporate simple nutrition and lifestyle changes that other survivors found essential for recovery. Unfortunately, these were topics that at the time were not eagerly discussed by my oncologist. The guidelines I received from my doctors said simply to eat healthy, but there's much more to it than that. I believe my cancer journey happened for a reason. I continually thought about how I could make lemons into lemonade, and the idea for a book kept coming back to me. At first, I began writing as a personal journal and therapy. Later, I began to think that maybe what I had learned might be of use to my fellow breast cancer sisters and brothers. What could be learned from the obvious but not so easy to do, giving up bad eating habits and just changing lifestyle? I also wanted to give something back. The scripture that reads, "To whom much is given, much is expected," kept coming to mind. I don't think my breast cancer was a gift. I'm not crazy. But I do think that if I can make something positive as a result, that will be my gift. Hence, the proceeds from this book will be used for breast cancer research, more specifically, research for prevention. When I was teaching, one of my classroom themes was make a difference. I always tried to encourage my students to follow their dreams and use their God-given talents. I also urge them, never let the fear of failure keep you from trying. When I got the idea for this book, it just wouldn't go away, and I felt driven to take a chance, even though I had never done anything like this before. But then I thought of the joke that goes like this. There was a big storm, and there was a lot of flooding. A man climbed onto the roof of his house to escape the rising waters. He began to pray for God to save him. Soon a man on a raft came by. He offered to help the man, but the man refused. He said, "God will save me." A while later, a man in a boat came by. He offered to help the man, but the man simply replied, "God will save me." Finally, a helicopter came by, but yet again the man refused, replying, "God will save me." In the end, the man drowned. He went to heaven and met St. Peter. He explained his situation and asked why God had not saved him. St. Peter replied, "God sent you a raft, a boat, and a helicopter. You just failed to use them." So, the moral of that story is, maybe God has given us tools so that we can help keep our bodies healthy. But we don't have all the answers yet. So much of modern medicine focuses on fixing the problem, much like closing the barn door after the horse has escaped. As Dr. Tuohy at the Cleveland Clinic says, prevention is the cure. If we were to change our medical focus from treatment to prevention, would it be possible to have a world without cancer? One last thought. Could politics, greed, and ambition be obstacles to doctors who have solutions which could possibly lead to a cure? We don't know, but all we can do is try our best to find that out. So my writing has two purposes. First, I want to share my cancer journey with you and hope it will help you navigate yours. Next, I would like to summarize what I've learned from reading and gathering ideas from other survivors. This information helped me, and I hope it will help you too. I want to be able to say someday that not only did I take God's raft, boat, and helicopter, but I shared my ride with others. I think the only way to beat this horrible disease is for women to do what we do best, to share ideas and to care for each other. I hope this book will give you the strength to embark on a new way of living, and I hope together we can someday find a cure for breast cancer. You will see from my story that I followed the recommended treatment protocol suggested by my medical team. I did not use the information I gathered to bypass what medical science had to offer, but only to complement it. I encourage you to do the same. So to St. Peter, I say, I will offer you my undying devotion, but I hope we won't be meeting each other anytime soon. When I do, I hope you will say to me, "Those rafts, boats, and helicopters you shared really helped to make a difference." The end of chapter one. Chapter two, 1997 and the trial run. And the quote is, "The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble." And that's from Psalm 9, verse 9. The year 1997 was a memorable one for me, but not necessarily in a good way. It was the year Princess Diana passed away, the year John, the boys, and I returned from our overseas assignment in England, and the year I would have my first close encounter with the evil enemy known as breast cancer. The move home from England that July and the several months that followed were extremely stressful and challenging. Our house was undergoing a major renovation, and it seemed like there was no immediate end in sight. We spent our days cleaning and painting in anticipation of the impending arrival of our household shipment from Europe. To add more to the stress, what we hadn't elected to take with us to England 4 years earlier had been placed in storage. The storage container had already arrived, and our garage was filled to the brim with boxes of stuff. As we began to unpack this stuff, we discovered that much of their contents, which we thought had been stored in a climate-controlled environment, were either rusty or moldy, and nonetheless ruined. Oh well, I thought, we lived nearly 5 years without it. At least our container from Europe would have contained our good belongings. This was also not to be. When our British container arrived, we discovered that it had gotten wet. Not only gotten wet, but gotten wet with seawater. In addition to dealing with the house and the insurance company, we were trying to get the boys settled in school and adjusted to being American again. James was 13 and returning to graduate with this class from the 8th grade at St. Philomena Catholic School. And Jonathan was 16 and would be entering his junior year at the Portsmouth Abbey, otherwise known as Portsmouth Priory. For James, it was an easy and most welcome transition. He had missed his friends, and returning to St. Phil's to graduate with them was a blessing. He immediately reconnected with his friends, and he was welcomed with open arms. He was ecstatic. Our home had always been an open door to both of our boys' friends, and we enjoyed and encouraged them to constantly hang out in our basement. James enjoyed the nickname of British Boy, and he and his friends loved it. For Jonathan, things were quite different. Coming home meant a new school, where he not only had to attend class 6 days a week, but he'd need to make all new friends. There were a few of St. Phil's students he knew from elementary school attending the Abbey, but not many. John had developed a love of golf in England, and that would play a large role in meeting new people and making friends. Culture shock happens when moving in either direction across the Atlantic. Our IBM counselors had warned us of this before our assignment began, although we didn't believe it at the time. They said we would become so settled into British culture that it would be an adjustment coming back. As it turned out, they certainly knew what they were talking about. Life in England had allowed our family many opportunities for travel. Since the daily pace there was slower than America, we had also enjoyed much more family time. We had purchased a small house by American standards, but large by British, on a lovely cul-de-sac in the town of Guildford, Surrey. Our years there were like going back 20 years in time. The boys could ride their bikes into town, and we all enjoyed the slow and easy pace of British life. I had obtained a teaching position at the American Community School in Cobham, Surrey, where the boys were attending. Although we missed our family in America, life was simple, and we had each other. When we returned, I was 41 years old and hadn't really had a checkup since leaving America 4.5 years earlier. I was feeling overwhelmed, was premenopausal, and needed help, so I made an appointment with my doctor. He suggested I have blood work and a routine mammogram. I had always had the condition known as fibrocystic disease, which made self-examination very difficult. Fibrocystic disease causes breasts to feel extremely lumpy due to extensive fluid-filled cysts. This condition, although benign, makes self-exams very difficult. I never knew or felt that what I was feeling was normal. When I left his office, he sent me downstairs to the radiology lab for the mammogram. 3 days later, as I was getting ready to drive the boys to school, the phone rang. It was the radiology technician at the hospital, asking if I could come by for more films. She said the doctor needed a closer look at my left breast. Of course, I became concerned, and with everything else going on, I didn't really want any more stress. I called my husband at work, who assured me it was probably nothing. He said to call him when I got home. Hard to believe, but this was before cell phones. After dropping the boys off at school, I drove to the hospital. The technician kindly tried her best to put me at ease, saying that the radiologist was just looking for more magnified films of one area that had not been clear enough to examine in the previous mammogram. She took about 4 more films and then said I could get dressed while she showed them to the doctor. I sat in the waiting room expecting her to come back and say I could go home, but instead she said the doctor needed to see me. Up to that point, my emotions had been in check, but now I was visibly shaken. The doctor escorted me into his office and put my mammogram films up on the light screen. He pointed out a circled area near the back of my left breast. All I could see were tiny specks of white dust in what appeared to be a circular pattern. He referred to these tiny specks as microcalcifications and said that when they appear in a pattern like mine, that sometimes, in a small percentage of cases, they might indicate cancer in the milk ducts. He said not to worry because 80% were often benign. Only 80%, I thought. I'm a girl who likes to have 100% of the odds in my favor. I was stunned and asked if I could use the phone to call my husband. As soon as I heard John's voice, I dissolved into tears. He asked if I wanted him to come pick me up and leave my car there, but I said I would be all right in a few minutes, and I wanted to drive home. I sat in the waiting room for a while until I felt I could drive. I then drove straight home and collapsed on the couch with a migraine headache. The weeks that followed were a blur. My sister-in-law, Maureen, immediately set me up with her doctor at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Dr. Yvette Matori, who had been a colleague of Dr. Susan Love. Maureen would be my guardian angel with regards to finding the best doctors in Boston, not only this time, but unfortunately again in the future. Her help with this was definitely a life-saving one, and I'll be forever grateful for her support, love, and guidance. During our meeting with Dr. Matori, she concurred with the radiologist's finding and scheduled me for a biopsy the following week. She also reinforced what I had been told by the radiologist, that the shape and pattern of these microcalcifications could indicate a malignancy, but only in a small percentage of cases. She explained that the ductal carcinoma in situ, known as DCIS, is a non-invasive breast cancer. On the mammogram, DCIS usually looks like a cluster of microcalcifications. It can be difficult to know from a mammogram whether the DCIS is invasive or ductal cancer. A biopsy was the only way to be absolutely sure. Due to their location near the chest wall, it would be necessary to do a lumpectomy. The next 7 days inched by painfully slow. No matter how hard I tried to keep busy and keep my mind off the biopsy, it was nearly impossible. Not only am I obsessive-compulsive, but I am also an anxious person by nature. I tried to keep calm and to pray and stay positive. It wasn't easy, but finally the day of the biopsy arrived. That morning, as we were getting ready to leave for the hospital, my cousin Bob and his wife Kathy called to wish me luck. Kathy was a 5-year breast cancer survivor and had had personal experience of what was in my immediate future. Her initial treatment had included a lumpectomy, but due to the extensive nature of her cancer, she later required a mastectomy and chemotherapy. Kathy came from a family which had a history of breast cancer, and just previous to her diagnosis, she had lost an aunt to the disease. I told Kathy of my fear of the wire localization process that was necessary before the surgery. Since I did not have an actual lump that could be felt, a wire had to be inserted into the suspicious area before surgery to guide the surgeon during the biopsy. This is called wire localization. I asked her if her lumpectomy had included this procedure and if it was as bad as it sounded. She said yes, that she had had that as well, but would not give me any details. That only made me more anxious. I could tell by the tone of her voice that this would not be a walk in the park. However, if I could have run away at that point, I definitely would have. Kathy said she'd call me that evening to see how I was feeling. Since they don't do actual surgeries at Dana-Farber, the lumpectomy was performed at Dr. Matori at the Brigham and Women's Hospital next to the Dana-Farber. Anyone who knows me knows I do not like hospitals, needles, or anything remotely similar to a medical procedure. During the wire localization, a mammogram machine is used to guide a needle containing the wire into the correct location. It wasn't horrible, but I wouldn't sign up for it if I didn't need it, and it was not pleasant. I felt a bit lightheaded and nearly fainted, but in the end, it took 45 minutes before they could get the wire in its proper location. Boy, was I ever looking forward to anesthesia at this point. Finally, it was time for the actual lumpectomy. I was grateful for the mild sedative they gave me for administering the IV. And at that point, I was even grateful for the IV. The staff at Brigham and Women's Hospital is composed of wonderfully kind, patient, and understanding people, and I had total faith in my medical team. Under different circumstances, and if we have nixed all the needles, we might have actually been good friends. When the operation was over, Dr. Matori told John the area looked normal, but we'd have to wait for the final pathology to be certain it was benign. The full report would not be ready until about 10 days. She gave me an appointment to meet with her after 10 days after the surgery to discuss the result. When I woke up, I felt a huge sigh of relief that the procedure was over. Dr. Matori's conversation with John gave me hope, and I just really wanted to go home. Thanks to pain medication and ice packs, the pain was manageable. I went home, ate some chicken soup, and went to bed. The next 10 days crawled by. No matter how hard I tried, I could not help but to imagine the worst. When the day for the post-op appointment finally came, Dr. Matori entered the exam room and immediately came over and gave me a big hug. The results were benign. I did not have cancer. I became so overcome with emotion, I began to sob. After this close encounter with breast cancer, my yearly mammogram became a psychologically torturous experience that would make me crazy with worry for weeks in advance. In the years that followed, my date with the mammogram machine would require several callbacks for magnified pictures of suspicious areas. I felt it was like waiting for an axe to fall. At the time, I didn't realize that my breasts were actually undergoing changes that were a foreshadowing of things to come. My worst fears would again be realized with that chilling call in December 2008. One thought that still haunts me today is that the location where my benign microcalcifications were surgically removed in 1997 was the same area that would later threaten my life. I'm going to have to leave you hanging there. That's the end of chapter 2. And we will pick up with chapter 3 in my next podcast, the title of which is Attacked from All Sides. So I leave you with hope and encouragement and wish for God to cover you with calm and peace. And thank you for joining me in my podcast. And for more information on my journey or tips for breast cancer survivors, please go to my website, www.sistersforprevention.com. Have a nice night, and thank you again for joining me. Till next time.